Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call of the day. Earlier in the show, Sean mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein. Gary Gerald on the call.
Hill, six on the clock, pulls it out on the perimeter, being challenged. Now he drives, jab step, ball away to the left, comes up short, grabbed by Collison, beats Cauley-Stein, and Willie scores, baseline left, 89-86. There's a second chance hoop for the Kings, and did they need it. Now the Grizzlies, down by one, Carter with the inbounds to Conley. Conley being chased, races up the floor, goes to Zebo, three to win it, off the iron, no good, grab, thrown back up by the Grizz, no good at the buzzer, and the Kings, for the second consecutive day, win a one-point nail-biter.
Gary Gerald with the call on the Sacramento Kings radio network. In fact, I know our management at one point, at the urging of the suit, was thinking about carrying the Sacramento Kings radio network. And then, you know, then Roger woke up. He went, what? No, we're not doing that.
I think may have had something to do with Gary Gerald's connection with IndyCar and all that time in the pits.
And Drew kept the entire time like, Roger, wake up, wake up. I'm like, what? He says, the suit has us carrying the King. No. Wrong. There's a fine line, Sean, between genius and insanity. I don't feel like the suit flirts with that line enough. All right, let's get to Kevin Kugler, the voice of the Final Four on Westwood One, the master himself. Kevin, welcome.
It is such a pleasure to be on with you. I mean, this is like the highlight of the week right here. The chance to talk with the voice of the Nittany Lions on a Tuesday afternoon it doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah, but you're doing the Final Four on Saturday, so everybody...
I don't care. I do not. It's all downhill from here. Right. After this conversation, I may as well just go into a slumber, hibernation, if you will.
Really, no surprise to this veteran campaigner. All right, so... Kevin, which team did you see the most of in the tournament of the four that are left?
Gonzaga. I have been West Coast tied over the last couple of weeks, as you know, on the western edge of the Big Ten Conference, as I am. So
yes.
I've been in Salt Lake City and San Jose.
All right. Let's get to the amazing part of Gonzaga, and that would be defensively, because they're 0.831 points per possession in this tournament. I mean, they've defended 284 possessions in this tournament and given up 236 points. That's remarkable. You've watched it. How do they do it?
It's the best part of this team, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because rarely do people bring up what they do defensively. You talk about their offense, and they're scoring a ton of points, and they're shooting the heck out of the ball. But this is a defensive team that is extremely well coached, and they are just so aggressive. They contested 90% of the shots that West Virginia took in the win over West Virginia. I mean, they're an aggressive team, which gets them in trouble sometimes. Zach Collins had some foul trouble. He's a freshman coming off the bench. He's extremely talented, 7-footer. And if he played in a major conference, you'd probably be sick of hearing about him right now, because he's one of those guys that is just fantastic, but flies under the radar because he comes off the bench for a team in the West Coast Conference. But what they do is they are very aggressive. They're not afraid to switch. They're not afraid to man you up. They've got length with Jonathan Williams, who can defend anybody in the backcourt or the frontcourt. And they've got a big man in the middle in Shemek Karnowski, who alters shots and makes it very difficult to move inside because he eats up so much space. He's 7'1", he's 300 pounds. And I've watched guys over the last 2 weeks try to move this man down low. They don't do it. I mean, you just don't.
I think we lost him there for a second. All right, we'll just get him back, and we'll do that. And because, obviously, maybe he feels the highlight of the week is over. But we'll get him back online here in a moment and get back to Gonzaga and what he saw out of them when he was working the West Coast in Salt Lake City and in San Jose. Yeah, I'm going to assume that the highlight of the week was so overwhelming, you just faded away.
I hung up. I mean, it was one of those moments where I went, wait a minute, this isn't going to get any better than what I'm doing right now. I'm just hanging up the phone, and I'm leaving because it can't. No, but, I mean, what we were talking about Gonzaga and the defense, and I'll end my long and rambling point interrupted by a hang-up and just say it's the most underrated part of their game, and it's the two best defensive teams, according to KenPom, as far as adjusted defensive efficiency goes, matching up on Saturday night in the Final Four. So it may be a hotly contested game, and it'll likely be a hotly contested game somewhere under the 65-point mark.
Right. You have to get a little bit of luck to get through this thing. I think anybody knows you have to have some to get to this point. I felt an area where Gonzaga was fortunate was the sequence with which they played West Virginia. Instead of playing them with one day to prepare, they at least had three to prepare for it. And I felt that was a big break for them.
It's a huge break for them because having to prepare for that West Virginia team with one day is extremely difficult, especially when you see very few teams like that at any point during your season. And very few are better than West Virginia at what they do. Gonzaga getting that extra time to prepare was just enough. And Mark Few is a spectacular basketball coach. And if you give him a little extra time to get ready for somebody, he's going to be able to come up with something, whether it be offensively, defensively, or both, that gives them a little bit of an edge. I'm sold on his coaching prowess. I have been for a long time, but really watching it up close over the last couple of weeks, it's a legit team. I know people questioned them as a number one at the beginning of the tournament. I hope they aren't now because they've won games in different ways throughout this tournament. I'm really impressed with what I've seen from Gonzaga.
Now, they'll get South Carolina. And South Carolina has in its lineup, in my opinion, a rarity, and that is a power guard. Penn State fans would know what I'm talking about. DJ Newbill was a power guard. Sidarius Thornwell is a power guard. Give me the difficulty of facing someone like that who obviously is he's a great two-way player.
Well, he's so good at doing everything that you have to decide, all right, where am I going to pick my poison? How am I going to match up with him defensively? And that's going to be a real interesting matchup because when you look in the backcourt of Gonzaga, you see Jordan Matthews, who is a 6'4 senior. You see Nigel Williams-Goss, who's a 6'3 junior. I don't imagine either of those guys would be on. I would guess Jonathan Williams, the 6'9 junior swingman, gets the initial assignment on Sidarius Thornwell. He's long, but I don't know that he's as strong necessarily as Sidarius Thornwell. And then you go to the other side of the ball, and Thornwell is a blanket. So if he's on a Matthews, he's going to extend his defense to the perimeter. He has no problem doing that. That kills what Jordan Matthews' strength is, which is shooting the three. And Nigel Williams-Goss has been struggling anyway in the NCAA tournament. So if he ends up on him, it becomes a very difficult matchup from the standpoint of Nigel Williams-Goss likes to have the ball in his hands. Well, Thornwell, there's very few people better at taking the ball out of your hands than Sidarius Thornwell. And if he's on Nigel Williams-Goss and he's able to take the ball away from him with some sort of regularity, really throws off what Gonzaga has been able to do offensively.
Yeah, there's so few power guards in today's college game. That's why the matchup is so difficult with him because it's not the kind of guy you see all the time.
Well, and he's helped other guys on this roster perform. The way he stepped up in the NCAA tournament has elevated the game of P.J. Dozier.
Yeah.
It's elevated the game of Mike Kotsar. It's elevated the game of Rakim Felder. I mean, he's made guys around him better because he draws so much attention, obviously. But then these other guys say, look, we're pretty good players as well. And Dozier's averaging over 15 points a game in the tournament. I mean, they're a balanced team, too. Because of what Thornwell does in a lot of ways, that balance comes from other places. And Thornwell's still getting his. Their offense in the tournament is averaging 9 points per game more than they do on the season. How often do you see in an NCAA tournament, well, you got to go through teams like Duke, you've got to go through teams like Baylor, you got to go through teams like Florida. How often do you see numbers go up in those games? You just don't.
Yeah, you don't. Exactly right. Oregon, they probably have the hottest shooter in the tournament, I would say, in Dorsey, who's been obviously tremendous. But I want to go to the Gonzaga route again. Kansas was averaging 1.33 points per possession heading into the Oregon game, and in 65 possessions they had 60 points. Oregon's defense is obviously underrated. What, you know, when you've taken a look at the tapes of them, what impresses you?
Jordan Bell. Yeah. I mean, Jordan Bell is the difference maker with this team. When Chris Boucher went down, they lost their third leading scorer, and they lost at the time their leading shot blocker. Now, Bell has passed him in the games of the tournament since he's had such a remarkable tournament.
And in fairness, Boucher's probably their best two-way player.
Agreed. Yep. And if he doesn't tear his ACL in the semis of the Pac-12 tournament, then this team is even better. In fact, I wondered what Dana Altman, who I've watched a lot since he was at Creighton and I live in Omaha, I saw him a ton in his career. I wondered how they were going to adjust that quickly, because you don't just take a guy like that out of the back line of your defense and really a big part of your offense and say, okay, we don't need him anymore. Remarkably, they're allowing 1.5 fewer offensive rebounds per game without Boucher. Wow. And that goes to what Jordan Bell has been able to do. I mean, he just is killing it on the glass. He is dominating up front. He's got great hands. And when I talk about great hands, I'm not just talking about the ability to block shots. He takes the ball away. He's very good as a stealing big man. And they play him in a similar role to how they play Draymond Green at Golden State right now, which is sort of Mr. Versatile, does a little bit of everything, and is involved in everything. And his ability to shut down Kansas, and that was the weak point. I talked about this before the tournament with a couple of people. Seeing Kansas up close late in the year, the one thing you had to be concerned about if you're Bill Self was an interior game, because Landon Lucas was just not quite that level of inside guy. And Bell ate them for lunch. Jordan Bell's the difference in the team. If he plays well, Oregon's got a great chance to advance, and I say that recognizing that they're playing perhaps the most driven team in this tournament right now, North Carolina.
That driven team, though, has had to survive the last two Sundays. What impressed you about how they survived, but also what, on the flip side, what problems were created because they put themselves in a hole?
Well, and I think what North Carolina has shown, and what impressed me is the fact that this team is resilient, and you don't, you know, you think of North Carolina and the blue bloods of college basketball, and you think about high-flying talent, five-star recruits, and maybe they're going to melt down a little bit when the pressure gets turned up. But that's not really this North Carolina team. It's an experienced team with a lot of veteran players, and you saw those veteran moments, really. And I realized that it was Luke May who hit the shot, and he's not exactly a veteran, hardly played last year. But the veterans around this team carry them through a lot of those moments where they need him. Joel Berry playing on two bad ankles, carrying his team through. Nate Britt playing a role that's not quite what he thought he was going to be playing when he got there, but he's accepted that role. That's what impresses me about them. That plus their work on the glass. They're extremely good on both ends, both defensively and offensively. They do it. And what's underrated about their game on the glass is the job they do in keeping opponents off the offensive glass. I don't think that gets talked about enough. Teams that are able to keep teams from getting second chances. And there are few in the tournament and few in the country, quite honestly, that do it better than North Carolina in keeping their teams, their opponents, off the offensive glass. They're going to need to get a little bit more from a production standpoint out of a couple of guys moving forward. But I like what I've seen from the resilience. I don't mind a team getting tested in the tournament, because I think that helps you grow as a team. And I think we've seen North Carolina grow over the last couple of weeks, even with those tests.
A couple more questions, Kevin, then I'll let you go. And one deals with the fact that these are four older teams that have made the tournament. We always hear Mike Bray talk about, hey, look, I want to be old. Yeah. We all are enamored with the freshmen, but is there something to be said about the fact that you saw four older, more experienced teams advance the way they did?
I think so, and I think that's good for the game. You know, we look for things that are wrong with college athletics a lot. Oh, you know, this one-and-done thing has killed college athletics. Oh, this is terrible for college athletics. This is, we can look at good things, too. This is a good thing. We have four teams whose fan bases have gotten the chance to watch these kids grow up in their programs. Now, I realize that for Gonzaga, three of the guys that we're talking about are all transfers. Jonathan Williams, Jordan Matthews, Nigel Williams, Goss have all transferred in. So they haven't really grown up in the program, but they are experienced, albeit with experience coming from elsewhere. But for Oregon, I mean, you got to remember, Dana Altman had that situation a few years ago where there were guys that he had to kick off the team because of the sexual assault accusation. There was basically nothing left. This is a team he's built from the ground up, essentially, right, with a whole bunch of guys who have been there for the last few years. North Carolina's the same way. They've had to build this program up with guys who didn't leave early, guys like Nate Britt, guys like Joel Berry. Justin Jackson's now in his junior season and is a fantastic player. And then South Carolina completely off the radar. But Frank Martin had to build this team from nothing to where it is right now. So I love this about this Final Four. I think it's good. I think it's exciting to see experience, but really it's not experience at this level, save North Carolina. None of these guys outside of this North Carolina roster have experienced what they're going through, including the head coaches. So I'm kind of excited to see how all of them handle it.
And final question, and it deals with the venue. I don't think, to my knowledge, there's never been a basketball game played at this venue.
No.
Which means everybody's going in there, and some domes are okay in terms of shooting background and depth perception, and others aren't. So what about that unknown, and how important does Friday become just for them when they get into the open practice to somehow figure it out?
You've got to try to figure it out, at least to a certain point, and I'm going to be anxious to see which team that helps more. You've got Gonzaga, who scores well, but they shoot the ball from all over the floor, but they defend the arc very well. I think it really helps in playing in these arenas. I think if you look at teams that defend the three well anyway, in a normal arena, boy, that's got to be a huge advantage when you get into these places that seem to always, at least on the first day of games, cause problems for shooting teams in these wide open spaces. And if you look at teams that defend the arc well, and South Carolina defends everything well, and Gonzaga is one of the best in the country defensively and one of the best in the country defensively when it comes to stretching your defense out to the three-point line. Those two teams defensively, now they're playing each other, so that may really make it for an ugly offensive game, but I do think those two teams in arenas like this and venues like this, maybe they get a little bit of an edge because they defend the three anyway, and it's harder to somehow shoot these threes, it would seem, in the big buildings. Maybe it gives these guys a little bit of an advantage going into the championship game, in which one of them will be playing on Monday night for a national championship.
Well, as always, great stuff, always great work. All kidding aside, you're one of the best, so I appreciate the time you gave us today, Kevin. Have a great time this weekend with it, and you'll do the usual high-level job you always do.
Well, I appreciate the confidence. I doubt it will be validated, but I'll do my best.
That's okay. They just point me toward whatever and I talk, so what the heck. All right.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Thanks, Kevin. Have a good one.
Kevin Kugler.
Westwood One. You'll be the radio voice of the Final Four, replacing the suit. We'll come back with more in a moment. Stop laughing. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, so I'm going to be a hostage of the Reichle Foundation coming up tonight. Why do I sense this?
Well, he did give you a two-hour window to show up and only, you know, hang for what, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, I'll be there for about 5 to 8, sure.
But the key is you could fill that time with an amazing mix of stories, and there would still be tons of them left in the bag that you wouldn't have time to get to.
What, are you looking for a raise? What? I'm not in charge of that, so really.
Did I send you that email by mistake?
Hey, sucking up to me while adorable does nothing for you. So let's see. They're introducing a new division. So what he said, if your schedule works for you, a 15 to 20 minute discussion with some Q&A on Penn State football and also on the future of Penn State athletics and the upgrades to facilities. This is what he wants.
Sounds like a piece of cake.
Says here, no stories about the suit.
I'm taking the fun out of it.
They said it's like taking fluoride out of the water. What does that mean?
I congratulated him on being the new voice of the Raiders, by the way. We broke that news yesterday.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, time now for our sports bozo of the day. All right, now this isn't really a sports bozo. It really is not. But this is an interesting story of the ability to pull strings and profit when you don't, when the rest of the world doesn't realize that you're actually the one profiting. Guess who is one of the biggest winners in this country when it comes to the Raiders moving to Las Vegas and the Rams from St. Louis to Los Angeles? It is a name everyone knows. Everyone knows this name. Guess who it is who's going to make a really great profit because of those two moves? Cowboys owner Jerry Jones. Now, keep in mind, he pushed very hard for the Rams to go to Los Angeles. He pushed very hard behind the scenes for the Raiders to go to Las Vegas. Now, I do not know what his stance was on the Chargers from San Diego to Los Angeles. You're saying, now, how can he get money from this? He's the owner of the Cowboys. Well, guess who is the co-owner of a marketing company with George Steinbrenner's family? Jerry Jones. The name of the company is Legends. And they are just rolling in dough on marketing the new stadiums for NFL teams. That's what they do. How about that? You're saying, what the heck? Jones owns a major slice of Legends, which is a hospitality marketing company that will now sell the suites and sponsorships for the Las Vegas stadium, which, by the way, they're also selling them for the Rams and the Chargers in L.A. And they're the ones that also sold out the suites and sponsorship at Levi's Stadium where the 49ers play. And Jerry Jones, he doesn't deny it. He says Legends is important. So they need Legends to sell. And Jones knows it's important. After Sheldon Adelson backed out helping to finance a stadium in Las Vegas, it was Jerry Jones who helped open the door for Bank of America to jump in and finance it. And there are two sources that say that Jerry Jones was behind the Bank of America move. It's amazing. And you're sitting there every day and you're trying to slug it out, trying to make sure the mortgage is paid, the car payment's paid, the electric bill's paid, and so forth, and maybe have a little bit left over to either do something for your family, or maybe have a, you know, there's something you want to get, or maybe there's something you want to do for your children, whatever. And these guys at this level have all these ways of making money. It's just stunning.
Well, it all makes sense because Sunday night, Jerry Jones was quoted, and of course, it ended up all over social media. Tomorrow's going to be a big day. And of course, that was, That's something to do with the big announcement with the Raiders going to Vegas. So not only does the Jones family get money for that, but I think if I heard it correctly, each NFL team will be getting an amount of money because of Oakland moving
to Las Vegas. It's a $350 million relocation fee.
So even though Miami and Stephen Ross voted against it, he'll still get money.
He still gets money. But this is on a different level. There are stories now that through the marketing company Legends, Jerry Jones will reportedly make hundreds of millions of dollars on these NFL relocations. Hundreds of millions. And he can't get a defensive end. Hundreds of millions of dollars he makes on NFL relocation. Is that amazing?
So if the next team that moves, like let's say Jacksonville, even though if they were to move to, let's say, London, or let's say sooner or later an NFL team could end up in Mexico, there's a possibility that Jerry Jones could have a connection with that with a stadium rebuild, if a stadium rebuild would be needed.
Possible. You know, because you would think on something like this they'd be bidding to do it, right? But I mean, every NFL team, by the way, is going to get $50 million in relocation fees. Okay? $50 million in relocation fees. Because the Rams, Chargers, and Raiders have all had to relocate. That's three. How about that?
Been a pretty good 15 months for the other 29 teams.
Yeah, but you know what? But there's some, but all right. This is something the fans of this state have never had to face. Only one, I'll say one time. One time the fans of the state have had to face it. The Penguins were almost lost. Almost went to Kansas City. Almost went to Portland. Mary Lemieux had to step in, save them. Okay. I got it. So, but everybody else, I mean, if you're a diehard Phillies fan, now, are you a Phillies fan, or I'm not sure what you are?
Mm-hmm. I'm a Phillies fan. Mm-hmm.
Well, how would you feel about them moving?
Oh, I'd be crushed.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit, truth be told, I'm a bigger football fan than a baseball fan. I mean, now, if the Steelers were to move, I mean, you'd probably have to have the authorities check up on me to make sure I'd be coming to work the next day.
You've got to put yourself into the shoes of the fan of the Raiders. The Raiders are not struggling to draw in Oakland. They may not have the best stadium situation. Neither do the A's, obviously. It's the only stadium that has both baseball and football in it, after that being the norm in the 60s and 70s. But think about that fan base. We're going to go. Shiny new object over here, we're leaving. San Diego's had a team since 1961. 1961, they've had a team. Oh, it's not that far to Los Angeles. Like, come on, they're the Los Angeles Chargers now. They're not the San Diego Chargers. And the Rams have bounced all over the place. Cleveland, Los Angeles, Anaheim, St. Louis, back to Los Angeles. You know, fans in our area cannot relate to this. You know, fans in our area who are like, let's take Steeler fans, laugh about the Browns going to Baltimore and then the bad Browns being brought back to life again in the current form in 1999. Okay, guess what? Not funny. It's not funny at all. What did Cleveland do wrong to lose their team to go to Baltimore? What? Did they not sell the stadium out? No, they sold the stadium out all the time. Now, Did they need a new stadium? Yeah. Well, they had to build the shiny new object when it was all said and done. But Cleveland fans have been as loyal as any in the league, and they've been, you know, since they came back in 1999, they've been given very little to be happy about. You know, we can laugh and joke about Cleveland, whatever, but think of the fan. I mean, Eagles fans should be able to relate because before the current run where they've been decent, been good, it was a long run where the Eagles did nothing. Zero. Okay? Trophy case appears to be a bit devoid of Super Bowl trophies. Okay? But there's no threat that the Eagles are leaving Philadelphia. There is no threat that the Phillies are leaving Philadelphia, the Flyers, the Sixers. No threat of it. None. But when you have franchises leave, I mean, you have a franchise in the National Football League. Do you really think your franchise is going? I mean, the Oakland Raiders? And not only that, but the Raiders, after being a bastion of mediocrity since their last Super Bowl appearance when they lost to Tampa Bay, was in 2002, they've been a bastion of mediocrity ever since. Now are good again. And they've got the quarterback to make it all happen. And that's... Ah, wow. I just think it is... I don't know. I have an empathy for the fans of San Diego. I have an empathy for the fans of Oakland. Because, you know, I've been a fan of a team that moved. You know, I'm growing up in Connecticut, the only professional team we ever had was the Hartford Whalers. Were they the greatest franchise going? Nope. But they were our franchise. It's the only professional team we had in the state. Yeah, you had an incompetent governor and Lowell Weicker, and he was massively incompetent. You had a disingenuous owner, and you ended up losing the team to Carolina. Now, you're telling me that Carolina, which is out of 30 teams, is 29th in attendance, has turned out to be this awesome and incredible move that has changed everything? And like the Browns going to Baltimore, they ended up winning the Super Bowl. The Whalers finally went down to Carolina. They ended up winning the Stanley Cup.
It was actually 20 years ago this week when the Whalers made that announcement that they were going to relocate. Right. Oh, I love the look of that jersey, though.
Oh, no, the Whalers are still number five in the NHL still.
Now, do you have a jersey or a T-shirt you still have?
Well, they have a T-shirt. I don't have jerseys.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, why this to me, above all, if an area is not supporting a team, if an area is not supporting a team, then by all means, I can completely understand. Look, it's just, you know, the area is just not into the particular sport, the team, whatever. Okay, I got it. But these teams that are moving, some of them are, I mean, you're telling me, I'll give you, let's see, let's go with a hockey example. I mean, I mentioned the Whalers. You're telling me the Quebec Nordiques, who sold out every game sold out, moved to Denver and became the Colorado Avalanche. Sold out every game. Okay, the Arizona Coyotes were the original Winnipeg Jets. They sold out every game in Winnipeg. What are you supposed to do? Now, I'm not saying Denver shouldn't have a team. I think Denver should have a team. Now, Denver did have a team at one point. You know where that Denver team is now? The New Jersey Devils. You know that? Kansas City Scouts, Colorado Rockies, New Jersey Devils. Now, there's more movement over the years in the NHL and to a point in the NBA. What did the Seattle Supersonics fans do to deserve losing the Sonics to Oklahoma City? What? They're selling out games in Seattle left and right. They're excited. Their first round pick had an awesome rookie year, Kevin Durant. Yes, Durant was drafted by the Seattle Supersonics and went with the Sonics to Oklahoma City. What did the people of Seattle do wrong? When they were red hot, they were playing in the Kingdome and averaging at times 40,000 a game. Because they didn't have a shiny new object for an arena, they moved them to Oklahoma City. So I just don't. This game that leagues and ownerships play, okay, is something that is, I find to be, really disgusting. And I don't like, for example, it's the same thing when you look at major businesses moving. I'll go back to my Connecticut example again. Pratt and Whitney moved their operation south to Alabama and cost the state of Connecticut thousands of jobs. That was the job creator in that entire state. You know, I mean, and there are reasons why. I'm not going to get into all the governmental reasons why. I mean, it's just to the credit of governments do have a tendency to make a mess when they think they're smarter than everybody else. And I can assure you, in no uncertain terms, they aren't. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sunbury Motors Lincoln continues to satisfy the most discerning buyer by making American luxury affordable. If you are looking for a midsize SUV, the Lincoln MKX has to be on your list. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has a brand new 2016 Black Velvet MKX all-wheel drive with navigation and panoramic vista roof with an MSRP of $48,640 for only $43,352. That's $5,288 in savings. You can choose from 12 MKXs in stock now. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has 5 2017 Lincoln Continentals in stock, ready for the test drive of your life. The 2017 Continental won the coveted 2017 AutoGuide.com Reader's Choice Luxury Car of the Year Award. Sunbury Motors has a 2017 Continental with an MSRP of $48,315, discounted to $46,315. Now is the time to see why more people are realizing they can move up to a brand new Lincoln from Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Yeah, I try to think of the fans, and every time I go out and speak to groups, I talk about areas where, you know, I think it's important. I think anybody's heard me speak, I've always talked about how important the fans are. Over and over again. And I'm a firm believer that a chunk of a reason why Penn State football, for example, is in the position it is now is because the fan base was so loyal and hung in there, and that it allowed them to hang in some games, win some games because of the passion in the stadium, the numbers in the stadium. And I also think it helped them recruit. Where recruits came in, looked around, says, wow, this place is really rocking. Who cares? I think I'll go here. This is great. And I've said that repeatedly. At every stop I've made, and probably over the last 5 years, I've probably done between 60 and 80 speeches over the last 4 or 5 years. And every single one, I brought that topic up because I want to make sure the fans understand that there is somebody that understands what they've meant to what's been going on here. And so then I look at the Raiders and the Chargers and so forth. Yeah, you got 60, you know 50, what? 56 years of loyalty, 57 seasons of loyalty down in San Diego. where it took them a while to build the fan base from Balboa Stadium to where they play now. I mean, do they need a new stadium? Yeah, everybody knows they need a new stadium. Could they have been? Could everybody have come to a better solution in San Diego? Yes. And that better solution probably would have been tearing down what they have now or keeping what they have up now and building next to it with another stadium. I think that the city would have agreed to that. Taxpayers probably would have agreed to it too. But they wanted, you know, but they were determined, we're going to build downtown.
Okay.
All right, what does that get you? I mean, I've been to that stadium for the Holiday Bowl. You want to know the greatest two features of that stadium happen to be?
Right.
The parking is awesome. There isn't a bad parking space around it because it's all around it because of the wide open space. And two major highways intersect each other right where they built it. You can get out of there. Silly me. That's why I always love when I say we built our stadium right next to the river. Okay, the river is picturesque. We see this all the time. You know, and Pittsburgh's a great example. Okay, what can't you do on the side where the river is built, where the river is? What can't you do? Park. Okay? And you can't drive out of there either. I always love. Oh, we're going to put it right on the river. Really? Why? I've always loved that. Why don't you put it in a spot that where people can park and get in and out? Okay? That's called thinking of the fans.
Say what you want about Jerry Jones, and a lot of people do have opinions on him, but one of the first things I heard about Jerry World is how conveniently located it is. Right
Jerry
off the
I've been to Jerry World. Jerry World is in a great spot. Same thing, and it's right down the street from the Rangers ballpark. Easy in and easy out. I'll tell you, Philadelphia has I think what Philadelphia has is great. I think it's easy in, easy out with lots of parking. I always love that. We're going to build it right next to the river. It's going to be picturesque. How about building it over there so I can park?
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.